Well, good morning, everybody. It's good to see all of you once again, and greetings from the Columbus, Ohio congregation. And greetings to all of you who may be viewing this sometime later on down the road via the videotape. My family and I started out our trek just a couple hours ago, and we had a very not eventful, but a very beautiful trip on the way up and over here to the Medina Church. And it's always good that we can be blessed with good weather and sunny skies, and we can spend some time together on God's holy day, his Sabbath day. I want to talk to you today, brethren, about something that's very personal. The topic I want to talk about today may strike a little bit of a personal chord within you, and I hope it does. Because the message today is a call or an appeal to an involvement, to an awareness, and to a great big responsibility that some of us have and have experienced over the years. I want to talk to you today, brethren, and I guess I'll give you the title of my sermon first before I really get into this. The title of my sermon today is going to be What the Children Are Missing. I want to talk a little bit today about child rearing, raising children, what it takes, what we have to do, what's our responsibility. Now, oftentimes when the minister stands up here, we look at the minister and we think of them as an expert. Now, I want to send a caveat out there right now because I'm no expert, okay? I'm somebody who is doing my best to raise my kids in a godly way. There's a lot of things that the Bible doesn't reveal about how we should raise our kids, but there's quite a bit of information that we can glean some good information from. See, roughly, 3.5 years ago, my wife and I, Angie, were very blessed to come in contact with four children. They are now our children. Most of you know the story about the adoption of our children. And things weren't always so smooth. When Angie and I look back on the times leading up to the adoption and some things that we did and some things that we occurred and some of the changes that resulted in lifestyle and perspectives that come as a result of raising four children, Angie always uses this. I love the analogy because it fits so perfectly. The snow globe analogy. You know what a snow globe is, right? We always used to play with those when we were kids. You take this snow globe and it's got some sort of a picture or some sort of a little image inside of it. And you take this snow globe and you shake it up and you shake it and you shake it and you set it on the desk or wherever you're at. And you watch all these little particles float. And they float around. It looks like this great big snowstorm is going on. And then after a while, after some time, things start to settle. And then you pick it up, and you shake it again, and the snow swirls around. It's like a storm, and things start to settle again. That's a lot like being a parent. Boy, was I in for a big surprise on lifestyle changes, and not only that, but also the joy that comes along with being a dad. I'm a proud dad. I love my children. They're not my naturally born children, but don't ever try to convince me of that, because I love them as if they were. To me, there's no difference. No difference at all to me. But it does pose some very interesting challenges for us, and not only for us, but those of you who are parents out there. It's a huge responsibility. And there's a lot of things in this life, brethren, that bring me some trepidation. You watch the world news, you watch the events that are coming upon mankind. It brings me a little trepidation to see some of the things that are going on in the world, does it not? It does me. This crazy man, Ahmadinejad, or however you pronounce his name, over in Iran, some of the things that he's threatening to do. Those things cause me to lose a little bit of sleep sometimes, but there's nothing that causes me to lose more sleep than the huge responsibility of raising children. You see, we're kind of at a little bit of a crossroads here because Jade, our oldest, is going into middle school this year. Boy, I tell you what, we are growing up in a much different world, or they are, than what we did. Are they not? There are pressures, there are challenges, there are attitudes out there that if we're not careful as parents can rub off and take them over. I can only illustrate this correctly by going back to a story that happened, I think it was sometime in the spring, if I remember correctly. I go to the local middle school track, and I do some running. It's one of my favorite pastimes to do. And while I was running, there were some kids hanging out at the middle school track. And as they were walking through the field, I just happened to be running by them the same time that we were kind of crossing paths there. They're on the other side of the fence. And I heard this young middle school boy say something to this little middle school girl, probably sixth grade, seventh grade, something like that, that made my jaw drop. My jaw dropped. Because I couldn't believe the vulgarity. I couldn't believe the attitude that went along with that and some of the things that this kid said. I can't repeat them to you. I can't repeat them to you now in the sermon because that obviously wouldn't be appropriate. It was vulgar. It was obscene. It was disgusting. Don't even ask me afterwards because I can't tell you what he said afterwards either. It was that bad. It was that bad. And I started thinking to myself, what kind of home life does this little boy have? What must he see every day? What must he hear every day from his parents to even remotely think that what he's saying or what he's doing or how he's acting is remotely okay? I can't repeat it. I wouldn't repeat it. But I got to thinking, you know, that's somebody's little girl that this kid's talking to. This is somebody's little boy that's acting this way. Somewhere along the line, there was an influence in this young man's life that caused him to give in to this type of behavior, to give in to this type of a cultural influence. And I'll tell you what, brethren, there is no more cultural influence that our kids will be faced with more than the pulp culture, more than the culture of the public schools. Do I say it? The public schools. Now, I know a lot of good teachers in the public school system. My wife is one of them. There's a lot of good people out there that do teach, and there's a lot of Christians out there that are in public schools. But if we think for one second, if we're so naive for one second to believe that they aren't challenged with influences that we were never challenged with, brethren, we are naive and we're missing the boat on something. We have to raise our children with godly standards because if we don't, guys, if we don't, guess who will? Society will raise them. Society will tell them what's right and wrong. They will tell them how to behave. The school system will give them a perspective on history. We were talking about this a little bit before I came up here. They're rewriting history, the school systems are. History is being rewritten. They're getting a perspective that just isn't true from the crucifying of the founding fathers of our country. Now, they weren't perfect people. I know that. To the utter lie that's being established out there right now that this country was not established on Christian principles, that's a lie. To tell everybody that the founding fathers were nothing more than deists, and I can go on and on and on, some of the other things that they're being taught right now, how about evolution? Evolution. Now, the last time I was in school, very, very long time ago, I just turned 40 years old here a few weeks ago, they still taught creation in our school. When I was a freshman in high school, we had a principal, God love him, I don't know if he's still alive or not, Mr. Whitaker. Angie, you probably remember him because we went to school together. But this was Mr. Whitaker's perspective. His perspective was, we're going to allow the debate in our public school. We're going to have a debate. We're going to have the Christians on one side, and we're going to have those who believe in the scientific theories on the other side. And people who are Christians brought in their Bibles. The other students took out their textbooks, and we went at it. We argued back and forth. We had the debate. And our principal's attitude was, so what if they sue us? We got lawyers for that. See, he had guts. Now, back in the time that we were going through high school, things were getting worse and worse. And I make no bones about it by saying that each generation is getting worse. Each generation is getting worse. The attitudes are changing. Their minds are changing. And there's a couple different reasons for that. We as Christian parents, not only in the Church of God International, but anybody nowadays who names the name of Christ, has a huge duty and responsibility, brethren. And the cards are stacked against us. We fight against society. We fight against the school systems. We fight against even the people they hang out with. We need to be aware of who kids hang out with. We need to be aware. We need to be aware of that. Also, when I was running, I happened to notice that some of these little girls, does it seem like to you, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm wrong about this, maybe it's just me, But it seems like children are trying to grow up a little bit too fast. You know what I mean? Am I wrong about that? I mean, if I am, please tell me, because I stay awake at night worrying about this with my two daughters. I worry about it. My daughters make me nervous. Not them, so to speak, but the things that are out there to try to influence them, to rob them of their innocence. This man lays awake at night sometimes wondering about his daughters and how they'll be. I worry. I really do. For some reason, it seems like parents nowadays don't mind if their daughters are growing up a little bit too quickly. Along with this boy that made the statements that he did, there was a girl, obviously. Guess what she had on? I'm sure you've seen this. The new shorts that are out there. The new style of shorts. You haven't seen them? Well, they take them and they're already cut up to here. And then they take them and they roll them up till the legs of the shorts are about this long. Doesn't cover much. It doesn't cover much. And I think, into my mind, when I watch these type of things, what in the world are the parents doing? Where are they at? Are they involved? Are they aware? If you ever want to have a very interesting conversation and a very enlightening conversation of what it is to raise children, go down to the Atlanta church and talk to Mike Rogers. Talk to Mike Rogers. Last time I was down in Atlanta, he and I sat down for a while because I've given this sermon before. A little bit's changed a little bit since then. But Mike sat me down, and I was asking Mike, and if Mike hears this, he'll probably chuckle about it because we sat down for quite some time. And I said, Mike, you know, you got to tell me here, pal. Am I normal? Am I normal here to be worried like this? I mean, is it normal for a father to be worried like this? Because everybody I look at, everybody I talk to, they don't seem to be concerned about what's going on with their children. They're growing up too fast. Girls in middle school are starting to wear makeup. I mean, I'm talking about sixth grade, fifth, not even middle school. I'm talking like fourth and fifth grade. There are some girls in my children's school come to school with rouge, dark red lipstick, mascara, shirts cut down to here. Well, what gives? So I was talking to Mike, and I expressed to everybody at Atlanta Church, like I am now, about my concern that it doesn't seem to be that parents are that involved anymore, and maybe it's me. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm too concerned. Maybe I'm a little bit paranoid. I don't know. And Mike told me some stories I won't share with you today, but that man's got it right when it comes to raising children. He's got it right. And he put me at ease. And he said, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but no, you're not the only one that worries. I worry too. And the best thing you can do is stay involved with them, stay in touch with them, communicate with them, love them, and dare I say it today, in today's culture, discipline them. Discipline our children. That's not always an easy thing to do as a parent, to discipline our children. Because quite frankly, there are some things that they do that I have to decide sometimes whether I'm going to laugh or I'm going to ground them. Anybody have been there before? Like, that was kind of a knuckleheaded thing to do. You probably shouldn't do that anymore, but I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing you could do, but we talk about these kind of things. But what the children are missing in life today, in society today, if I may just express some of my concerns a little bit here, they're missing God. They really are. Now, God's not very popular nowadays, especially if they go to public schools. God, specifically Jesus Christ, is not popular. He's not popular in the workplace. He's not popular in society. He's not popular in the schools. He's really not popular in the colleges. If we have kids in colleges, I feel for you guys. I feel for you. The worst thing that we can do as parents, Christian parents, is to kind of take a step back and say, just let them live their lives. They'll find out everything on their own. We don't have that luxury, brethren, anymore. We don't have it. We don't have the luxury to not be involved. We don't have the time to sit back and watch them do things that are so I'm not saying that we strangle them or we smother them with our presence. Don't get me wrong. Boy, the worst thing that we could ever do is not be involved. And that really is a balancing act. Sometimes I find myself really teetering on. How involved am I supposed to be? How much is too much? It comes down to one fundamental aspect when it comes to raising children, guys, and that is instinct. It comes down to instinct. Nobody knows my children better than I do, or Angie does. Not my neighbors, not my mom, not their grandparents. I know them better than anyone with the exception of Jesus Christ and God the Father. I know their ins and outs. I know their weaknesses. I know their concerns. I need to be aware of those things and be in tune with it, and I need to train them up in the way that they should go. You see, there's a lot of parents nowadays, brethren, that are AWOL, absent without leave. Doesn't seem like they care. Now, maybe they do care, maybe in a little bit different way, maybe because of society's progression and the outlook on things nowadays. Maybe things are just so different. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around sometimes how different things really are. Really. My daughters, my sons, they don't even stay the night with anybody yet. Seems a little strict. But to me, I am not going to turn my children over to somebody and their parents whom I haven't had dinner with, whom I haven't met, whom I don't have a relationship with. There's a lot of people out there, brethren, that are dangerous people when it comes to children. The worst thing we can do is put our children in the hands of somebody that we don't know, we're not aware of, we don't have a relationship with, because they're not going to care for them like we will. I don't even want to get into the topic of pedophiles that are out there. These are things that keep me awake at night. These are things that really bother me. These are things that I think about and I study about and I pray about. A lot of praying going on in my house lately. A lot of praying. Don't ever underestimate the power of prayer. Not just, you know, we got to pray for our children. We really do. And when it comes to topics like this, when we become a little bit nervous, at least I'm a little bit nervous, I have no choice but to do what it says in 1 Peter chapter 5. That I cast my cares upon Him, for He cares for me. I know He cares for them. I know He does. Jesus mentioned children. Jesus had a special relationship with children. They are a special creation to Him. They are a creation in making. And boy, just like a tender little plant, that we plant that seed and they start to grow up, they have to be shaped, pruned a little bit, molded a little bit, so they grow up and do the right thing. See, that's one thing that I'm always concerned with. I always tell them, my responsibility nowadays is with middle school, I drop my daughter Jade off to school. That's my job. I drop her off. Her and I have a lot of private time. I go get a cup of coffee at my local Starbucks. We sit there and we talk together. I play some music for her and stuff. We have father and daughter time. I talk to her about some of her worries. I sometimes express some of my worries. And before she exits my vehicle, there's one thing I always remind her of. And I'll always do this. I tell her, whatever happens today, no matter what somebody teaches you, no matter what somebody says, don't forget who you are. Don't forget who you are. Don't forget my expectations. Don't forget my expectations. You conduct yourself in school as if I'm sitting there right next to you at your desk, because believe me, if you don't, I will be. I'll be at your desk. Is that not true, guys? I'll be at school. They know that. I'll be at school. So if you don't want me sitting right next to your desk in the classroom, conduct yourself as if I were there. I'm a disciplinarian. I am. There's some things that I don't like about being a disciplinarian, but I do it out of love. I don't want to go sit next to him in class. I've been through that class before. But I will, if I have to. We have to be involved. We have to be involved. We have to make sure they're going to do the right thing. How are they going to do the right thing, brethren, if we don't set the expectations now? Teenagers, if they're teenagers and you're trying to set expectations, forget about it. It's too late. It's too late. Because they've already made their mind up. Me as a minister, my kids don't always like to hear dad as a minister because I'm dad. They want to hear it from somebody else. So they've heard this sermon in my office week after week after week now for 3 years, and I haven't been standing in front of a podium. They're probably tired of hearing this message. But what I want them to understand, what we should have our children understand, is that we love them. We're concerned for them. That we express to them some of the things that are on our minds. Because I'm worried. I really am. I say that sincerely. I'm nervous about it. Especially when you watch those little girls walk up and down the street with those short shorts I'm talking about. Boy, that makes me nervous. My daughters know better than ask me for something like that. It's not coming. It's not happening. And we owe it to our children that we do the right thing so that they can be empowered to do the right thing themselves. What the children are missing. Parents that set the expectations. Parents that set the expectations in various societal situations. Over here in Malachi chapter 4, I want to turn to a set of scriptures here since I've talked so long already. At least I'll get to a scripture here. The first thing that has to happen in raising our children, brethren, is we have to make sure that we have a strong bond with them. In order to ensure that we have a strong bond with our children, it is incumbent upon us, it is important to us, that we have a strong relationship with our Creator ourselves. Because when it comes down to it, who is God? Who is He? He's not a Trinity. Maybe, let me ask it this way. What's His nature? What's He geared towards? Who is He? What kind of relationship does He have with His Son? God's a family, brethren. God's a family. And if God is a family and He sets the expectations for His family, we ought to turn to God for those expectations because, quite frankly, the thing that I told my children when they first came to live with us is, I'm sorry, I'm going to make mistakes because you didn't come with a manual. I go buy a new car, guess what? It comes with a manual. I go buy a new dishwasher, it comes with a manual. I can look it up, see what's wrong with it, fix it. Children are different. Whether they're born to us naturally or they're adopted, guess what? There's no manual. There's nothing that says if Nicholas lies, Tony, turn to page 3, chapter 4 here. What do I do? Trinity steals. She hasn't. Turn to chapter 6, page 32. There's nothing I can turn to other than this. Believe it or not, it is good enough. It really is good enough. One of the most encouraging things that I've ever read regarding rearing children, when it comes to the psychology of raising children, I did a lot of research. I read some books. One of my favorite Christian counselors, his name is Gary Collins, and he wrote a book called Christian Counseling. And in this chapter, he says, take all the child psychology books that you've read, whether it be Dr. Spock, and I mean, there's a litany of list of all these people that tell you how to raise your children. And the first thing he says to do is throw them out. Get rid of them. So I take my books, throw them in the trash, and he says, pick up this, because God has equipped you with the necessities to raise your children through instinct. He didn't just turn mankind loose and say, figure it out, guys. Figure it out. Over here in Malachi chapter 4, I think the first thing that has to happen is I'm taking a little bit out of context, I understand. This is a prophetic scenario here, but starting in verse 4, the best things that we as parents can do is this. Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and the judgments. What do I do? If you lie, tell them you don't lie. What do you do if they steal? You turn to the scriptures, you don't steal. What do you do? Because what's it based on? Covetousness. You got to teach them about covetousness, idolatry, and what it is to put God first in our lives. Because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people, institutions, that want to take God out of our children's lives. Now, this is not me speaking from paranoia. This is fact. I'm not just paranoid. I watch it in the news every day. Right? Just keep reading down through here. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great dreadful day of the Lord, and he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. Oh boy. Let's read that again. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come to strike the earth with a curse. Do you think family is important to God? Boy, have we distorted the image of God through our new definitions of the family relationship. I hope somebody doesn't read to my children the marriage between Tommy and Johnny. I hope somebody doesn't try to teach them that what they're seeing in this redefinition of what marriage is and the battles that are being fought mostly on the West Coast right now, that it's okay for two men to marry each other. Or that it's okay for two women to marry each other. And by the way, just because the courts say they're married, God doesn't. It doesn't matter what the courts say. You cannot take marriage out of God's hands when He's the one that instituted it. It doesn't matter what kind of legislation you had. Now, I'm not saying there's not impacts on us for that. But obviously, it's God that is important. And we cannot forget His statutes and His judgments. And so how do we learn how to raise children? We turn to His statutes. We turn to His judgments. Just like He taught us, we teach them. It's really a simple matter of that, teaching God's law, teaching the nature of God and who He is. Having a strong family unit when it comes to raising children is very vital to a strong society. Let me just give you a statistic. I'm not pulling this out of the air. This is something that came from, I believe it was, the Children's Fund or some sort of a hunger oriented charity group that was plastered all over the walls at our workplace. And the statistic indicated that when it came to single parent families, that we could wipe out hunger, 43% of hunger in our country. 43% of hunger could be done away with by simply keeping the family together. How do we make sure the families stay together? That the children have good, strong modeling roles to look at, that when they look at mom and dad are still going to be there. They're going to be there for them. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I am. But the thing about it is, the children will learn about relationships and what it is to be committed to each other by looking at us. We are the example. So if we're going to set expectations for our children, we better be living the expectations ourselves, because there's nothing that turns people off worse than hypocrisy. I can't think of anything worse that made Jesus Christ cringe worse than hypocrisy. He hates hypocrisy. He hates it in our families. He hates it in our government. He hates it everywhere. He just wants the truth and He wants the expectations to be there. Too many families have suffered hardship. Sometimes it's no fault of our own. Sometimes you might have a woman who maybe lost her husband in a war, and she finds herself by herself. And to those parents, I tip my hat to them, because, boy, they have two roles to play. They have a lot that they need to be concerned with, and they have a lot that's going to keep them busy. So my hat goes off to them. Not only my hat, but my prayers go out to them. I think we need to recognize that parents aren't always just split because of divorce. It is a real concern. But sometimes things happen. The spouse dies, they find themselves alone, and you got a mother by herself, and now she's got children on her own, and she's got to raise, and wonderful responsibility that she has. And parents do a wonderful job at that, as long as they keep that right perspective. Over here in Psalms chapter 127, I know sometimes that we can take children and our families for granted. We all take each other for granted, don't we? I know we do. We just get busy. We get caught up in life. We just assume things are going to go a certain way. We just assume our wife is happy. We just assume our husband is happy. We just assume our children are doing okay. But we're in times now, brethren, we just can't assume. We have to be connected with each other. And we have to put God at the central focus of our family. God is the foundation of raising children. He is the example that we turn to. And in Psalms chapter 127, we read a little bit about this. God is a foundation of family building and child rearing specifically. Unless the Lord, in verse 1, builds the house, They labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is a vain or a useless thing for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage to the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy or blessed is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with their enemies in the gate. What is the foundation for a strong family? What is the foundation for having happy and blessed children? What is the reward for putting God as the foundation of the family? Happy moms and dads. Happy children. And how much does that contribute to a stable society? Our society, brethren, is unstable. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that at the Feast of Trumpets. But the redefining of the family, brethren, has to do so much with the perspective that people are living and putting God out of the center of their life. The responsibility of raising children is a very big one. Let's just turn over to a couple more scriptures here. Because I want to show you that there is, I mentioned in my opening statement here that the generations seem to be changing. The generations seem to be getting worse and worse as we live on. The 80s were more progressively worse than the 70s. The 90s were a little bit more worse than the 80s. 2000s a little bit worse than the 90s. It seems like the barriers are being lifted up from our children. Let's go over to where we can go to next here. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 1, 26. Because really when it comes down to it, there are very few scriptures that address the raising of children specifically. So I want to turn to you the scripture of where God told us, gave us the direction or gave us the permission to have children. I think it's important to remember that as children that is part of God's heritage, that we have to remember something. My children don't belong to me. They don't belong to me. Just like my wife does not belong to me. They're on loan to me. They belong to God. And as the head of the household, God the Father expects me to do my job, to make sure that I do the right thing. But over here in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26, he told Adam and Eve something that is that points us direction in the raising of children. He says, God said, or Elohim said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle of all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Man is the apex of God's creation. Man is the one that has dominion over God's creation. Man is the one who's responsible for caring for God's creation. Man is the central point of God's creation. They come down here to verse 27. It says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him male and female. Not male and male. Not female and female. Male and male. Then God blessed them and said, he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. God said, be fruitful and multiply. You know, this is the only command that mankind has kept perfectly down through the ages. To be fruitful and to multiply. They just don't do it like God says, but be fruitful and multiply. That is the heritage. That is what we're supposed to be doing. And then, there's nothing, again, nothing that says here what you should do in every little circumstance that comes our way. He just says, teach them. Teach them. Model it in our families. Model it in our Bible studies. Model it in our business lives. Everything that we do ought to reflect God's image so that they can learn from it. They really can. They can learn a lot from that. Now, God told them that they could eat from every tree except for the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, this is where some of the modeling starts to come through. Adam and Eve were God's children. He tells them, don't do something. Don't touch that tree. Get away from the tree. Sounds a lot like me at home. Get away from that bush. Get away from my rose bushes. Get away from there. But this tree had so much more implication, brethren, than my rose bushes at home. And Adam and Eve, well, they did the wrong thing. They did the wrong thing. And what did God do? Get out! Get out of the garden! You're out of here. Now take those leaves from off your body and go find some animals. I'm going to make you tunics, skin of tunics here. You can put those around your body. And I want you to see what you did. Look at the blood. Look at the blood, Adam and Eve. Look at it. Now get out of my garden. He disciplined them. He disciplined his children. Because he knew if he didn't discipline his children, that they were just going to run amok and do whatever they wanted to, and things were really going to go haywire. It's not that he didn't plan for this. God the Father and Jesus Christ were not shocked by this. Just as I'm not shocked when one of my kids do something I know that they know they're not supposed to do, I'm not shocked. I expect it. I expect the mistakes to happen. But this was such a grave implication here. So God tells us right here in the book of Genesis, even though he says, be fruitful and multiply, and it seems like there's nothing else there, we have to read between the lines sometimes to get to the heart of the issue. God punished them. God is a loving God, yes. And we'll get to that scripture here in just a little bit when I talk a little bit more about discipline. Angie, can I get a time check real quick? I'm sorry. You know, sometimes I get up here and the first thing I tell myself, I'm going to look at my watch, and the first thing I forget to do is look at my watch. So Angie always helps me keep track of things. He followed through with his word. If you do this, this is going to happen. If you don't do this, this is going to happen. I sat there and watched my neighbor last winter. His kids were playing with my kids in the driveway, and they're building this great big snow fort. And he came over and he told his little girl, he said, it's time to go home, sweetheart. Let's go. Come on home. She said, no, I'm not going. He said, please? Will you please come home? Nope, I'm playing, Dad. I'm not. I was watching this. I'm sitting there watching this interaction. And there's nothing that irritates me more than to watch something like that happen. He must have went back and forth with this little girl four or five times. And finally he said, I'm leaving and the monster's going to get you. If I have to threaten my children with monsters, then I'm not doing it. They don't need a monster in their life. Because I say it one time, get inside and that's the end of the story. Get inside. I don't ask please. I don't say please come inside. I say it's time to come in. And they come in. It was funny because when they came in from outside, they said, Dad, did you see that? She sat there and argued with her dad for all this time. Boy, what would happen if we'd have done that? Rhetorical question. Rhetorical question. But we sit there and we don't follow through. The worst thing that we can do as parents, brethren, is don't follow through with our threats. I don't mean that to sound, in a bad way. We don't follow through with the expectations, in other words. We don't follow through with the directions. Just like God did here, he followed through with his directions. Do your homework, or you're going to be grounded. Then they don't do their homework, and you don't ground them. Guess what's going to happen next week when their Friday folder comes home? They're not going to do their homework. Do your homework, or else this is going to happen, and nothing ever happens as a result of us telling them to do this, or don't do that, or to make sure this gets done, and we don't follow through with our expectations. How are they ever going to respect us as parents? And how are we in turn going to ever expect them to do the right thing if we're not doing the right thing ourselves? We don't need to threaten them with monsters. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, am I the only one that gets outraged over stuff? I mean, I really find myself getting irritated with some of this stuff. When I watch it out in society, I watched this lady putting her kid in the car at the kid's school last year. This kid didn't want to get in the car, so what did he do? He kicked her in the stomach, so I heard a, ugh! It bent her over. You know what she did? Nothing that I saw. Now, in our society, it's taboo nowadays. It is taboo to spank your children. I spank my children. Boy, do I hate it. I hate it. I want to make sure I make that clear. I hate it. I don't like it. It causes me to feel bad inside. But I have to. I have to do it. Now as they get older, I can back off a little bit. Jade will be 12 years old this October. I don't need to spank her anymore. Because I can sit her down in my office after school, after I get off work, and we're sitting there, and now I have the ability now to reason with her. I can talk to her. Just like God says, come on now, let us reason together. I can talk to her. And I can talk to her. She doesn't have to fear me. The worst thing that I could ever do as a dad, or Angie could ever do as a mom, is to have our kids so fearful of us. Now, I'm talking about discipline. That's why I'm bringing this up. I don't ever want my kids to be so fearful that they can't come to me and say, Dad, boy, did I mess up today. If they expect somebody to come at them raging and angry and irritated, and we beat them, I'm not talking about beating kids, I'm talking about spanking them. How are they ever going to open up to us to share with us the things that are bothering them if they're always afraid of us? Now, that's a balancing act sometimes. In our society, we're told if you spank a kid, they're going to lose all kinds of self-esteem. They're going to be ruined for life. Yeah, that's not what God says. I read in the Scriptures where God says, and since I'm coming to a little bit of an end of my sermon, I'll go ahead and skip ahead a little bit. God asks a question. He says, if you spank a child with a rod and he cries, will he die? God says, get over it. Do what you have to do. Do the right thing. You don't have to enjoy it. There's a lot of things about being a dad that I enjoy. Punishing is not one that I always enjoy. What I always try to instill in them is this, that if you get punished and I have to ground you, forget about spanking for a second, but let's just say I ground them. Yeah, you know what happens? I don't get to enjoy them. I'm getting punished too. So when they mess up, I'm missing out on quality time with them. I don't get to spend time with them because they're up in their room. Yes, I send them to the room. I send them to the room. I set the boundaries. They get grounded. God grounded Israel for 40 years. You think a week is bad? He grounded Israel for 40 years until that rebellious generation died, and he brought the new children, the younger generation, up into the promised land. They were circumcised and they began to worship God like they were intended to. When ancient Israel was waiting on Moses at the foot of the Mount of Sinai, what did God say? What did he tell Moses? Set you some boundaries. Put the boundaries up, Moses, and do not let the children cross over those boundaries. If they cross over those boundaries, you punish them. I'm not making it up. That's what God said. Set the boundaries up. Don't let them do it. Don't let them just run around and do everything they're supposed to do. Of course, when he was up there, they began to do the things they weren't supposed to do. People weren't there to put them back in line, to set those expectations, to remind them of those boundaries. So Israel, right in God's presence, started to go right back into idolatry again. And because they didn't listen to the boundaries. They didn't listen to the expectations. They took their father for granted. Well, there's a lot we could talk about today, brethren, but I know I'm running out of time here. In Hebrews chapter 12, just kind of solidify this point just a little bit. We are children of God, are we not? God is our Father. We are His children. If we've been baptized, had hands laid on us, have God's Holy Spirit, we are God's children now. Now, we're awaiting a resurrection, but right now, we are God's children. We are begotten, so to speak. Not born yet, begotten. We're waiting for that born-again experience, so to speak. But in let's go to verse 5 here. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as the sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord or the discipline of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens. So what should our perspective be when we punish our children, when we discipline our children? Not everything's about spanking. It really isn't. I'm just saying that there are times when that is necessary. When they're doing something that repeatedly is going to hurt themselves or it's going to hurt other people and they haven't listened, I've got no choice. I have to do that. I can remember when the kids first came to us. I remember Nicholas, the first time we set him in a chair because he was playing with a car he wasn't supposed to be playing, and he was playing with it somewhere he wasn't supposed to be playing with it at. And Angie decided she was going to sit him in a chair. This was all new to him. He never had this experience before. He sat down in the chair and he pulled his arms like this and he crunched up his face and he just got real stubborn. He wasn't going to move. He wasn't going to do anything. And then he was going to get up. See his foot coming off the couch a little bit. He's looking at us. What's going to happen? So I walked over to him and I said, get back up there. Get back up. That's where she told you to sit. You get back up there. So he did. A couple minutes later, he's looking around. See that foot come off again. This time I walk up to him. Get back in the chair. And he pulled his hand back real quick. Kind of looked at it. Looked around. Said, okay, not sure what that's about. And he sat there. A couple minutes later, there goes his foot again. This time a little bit more. Get back on the chair. Looked at me again in shock. Third time it happened. A little bit harder. Here comes the tears. He didn't try to get off that chair again. Because he knew that the expectations were there and I was going to follow through with it. But parents do not follow through with the discipline that we try to promote in raising them because it's good for them. Not because it brings us joy, because it's good for them. Because they need to know the boundaries. They need to know what's right and what's proper. We should also take advantage of what I call teaching moments. The teaching moments. This is where I find most of the time is spent more valuable with me and my children. When they do something wrong, when they get themselves into some sort of social situation at school, they handle it wrong, I sit down with them and I say, now, how do you think this could have went a little bit better? What could you have done? What could you have said that would have brought God glory, not embarrassed you and your family and embarrassed God? What could you have done a little bit different? And we talk about it. It's a teaching moment. I don't want to give you the wrong impression that I'm this harsh disciplinarian father who doesn't love this. I do love my children. But sometimes it's necessary to discipline them. So I don't want to give the bad perspective that all I do is walk around slapping hands and putting people in their rooms for a week. I don't do that. As they get older, those moments get more rare and more rare. And we find out that we have a little bit more joy and more joy with our family life. But if we don't do the hard things now, the children can be a blessing. But boy, oh boy, they can be a curse too. They can be if we don't set the expectations. And by not setting expectations and by not following through with those expectations, we do them a disservice. We really do them a disservice. My job, you see, your job as parents, when I really dwindled this whole thing down, what my job is to do as a dad, my job really is to bring my children to independence. My job is to bring them to live in a way that might be apart from me. I hope they don't ever leave me. Trinity tells me she's never getting married. She's going to live with me the rest of my life, and I'm more than happy with that. Stay with Dad. Just stay with me. I'm fine with that. I really do want her to grow up and get married and be happy, but if she wants to stay with me, she can stay with me if she wants. I'm not going to argue about that. But we have to do the hard things now, because if we wait, it's going to be too late. We let things go on too long. We forget what the important things are. We don't train them up in the way that they should go. We will lose them. And if we don't raise them, society will. Well, I could talk an hour just on what TV promotes alone. MTV, anybody watch MTV lately? When MTV, I'm almost afraid to admit this. When MTV came out, I remember the first week it came out. I remember it. I'm trying to think, what was the song? The song they played the song over and over again. I want my MTV. You remember that? It just drove me nuts. That's all I played. But now you got things called the real world. Unfortunately, that show is a model of the real world. That show is a model of what they will be faced with. Boy, I hope I've done my job when things are said and done. I hope I've done my job. I hope I've given them the tools necessary to succeed in life when I'm not around. This maturation, brethren, that we're trying to bring them to is a very important process that we have to be a part of. We have to be a part of. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, if we train up a child in the way that they should go, that they will never depart from the truth. There is a disappointment we may be faced with one day. I talked to him about this too. Nothing would bring a bigger smile on my face and bring me more joy than to eventually one day watch my kids or even have the opportunity to baptize my kids. Maybe one day one of my two little boys will be a minister. I hope. I hope that's the case. They make me proud enough as it is. But I'll tell you what, brethren, we can train children up in the way that they're going to go. We can teach them God's judgments. We can teach them God's law, which is our responsibility, and don't ever forget that. We have to do that. But God does not guarantee. He does not guarantee that if we train them up in the way that they go, that they'll be sitting in church with us all the livelong days. Because eventually, they'll go out on their own and they'll make their own decisions. Hopefully one day they'll return if we've done our right job. They might have a little bit of a time when they go out there and they do their own thing. But we just got to pray that they will come back and they will be with us. And they'll come back into God's fold because we've done what God has expected us to do. You know, I've heard it before. I've heard people say that, well, if your children are grown up and they're not in the church, then you didn't do your job. Hogwash. That's hogwash. That's a judgment that no one has any right to make. There's a little thing called free will out there. And people choose to be in church or they choose not to answer the call of Jesus Christ. Maybe God isn't calling them at this time. I don't know. We just got to make sure that we do everything that we can to do the best we can to ensure that if they do get off the path, that they're going to come back to God's fold. Boy, oh boy, there's just so much more I could talk about, brethren. So much more I could talk about. But I think what I'll do is, since I'm so close to the end of my sermon, I don't want to overstay my welcome here. I don't want to speak too long. I'm progressively becoming known as the minister that never finishes a sermon because I always over-prepare. But you get my point. Children are our heritage. They are a blessing from God. The children of today's society, brethren, are missing out on so much because parents have not done their job. Parents are AWOL. They're letting them grow up too fast. They're letting them be overcome and succumb to the pressures of society, from TV to radio to the styles that they wear. It's almost like you ask yourself, where's the mom and dad? Where are the parents? Because my little 12-year-old's not going to tell me what she's going to wear to school. I'm going to tell her what she's wearing to school, even if it may not bring a lot of joy to her. I mean, she's not allowed to wear shorts that are just above her knee. That's it. I don't allow anything else more than that. It just amazes me that parents nowadays are so AWOL that they would allow their daughters to become objects to people, to boys. I don't see boys dressing like that in school. Why is it always the girls? Why is it always the girls that are made the object to be looked at, to be eye-ogled, or whatever you want to call it? Why is it the daughters? Well, I'm going to talk myself into losing more sleep if I don't close this thing out here. But really, when it comes down to it, the children that God has entrusted into our care, they are a heritage. And if we do our jobs, brethren, hopefully they'll end up being a blessing to us. Hopefully, if we do our jobs and we teach them and train them up in the way that they should go by teaching them God's laws, and we continue with God's expectations, we set the expectations and we follow through love, and we do practice discipline in love, hopefully, brethren, hopefully we've done our job. And hopefully we pray for that. that God would reward us with doing that job, with children who grow up independent and safe, full of God's knowledge that nobody can ever take away from them. Bring them to independence. Bring them to a Christian independence through God. Because when it comes down to it, what the children are missing oftentimes are parents who don't set the expectations and follow through. That's what the children are missing.